presence. Do not neglect to do good and to share what you have, for such sacrifices are pleasing to God. Hebrews 13:16. Presence, presence in the margins, presence in the mainstream, presence as comfort, presence as challenge, presence through weeping, presence through anger, presence in low places, presence in high places, presence everywhere, presence as Jesus, the absence of absence. Presence as politics. Presence is politics, engagement with all things pertaining to the polis, the city-state specifically, the public square generally. The Epistle to the Hebrews commands us to engage in politics, to do good, and in economics, to share what you have. Politics means active presence in all spheres of the public square, from family to nation to the global stage. This presence integrates the ability to read and respond to personal, social, religious, economic, and more strictly, political needs all around us, each according to our calling and gifts. Presence, then, in both the biblical and the political sense, is never passive. A passive presence per se as mere existence does not constitute Christ-like witness. Only a presence that observes, discerns, analyzes, and responds can begin to do so. Presence in the moment. By the time this piece gets to you, the present moment will have passed, and the moment of that future where you are will be heavy with its own challenges. For now, our presence is requested in the moment of late October 2023, amidst the Israel-Hamas conflict with the bombing of the Gaza Strip. Israel has convinced itself that its actions are an appropriate response to Hamas's unprecedented attack against Israeli civilian communities around the Gaza Belt. Meanwhile, in Lebanon, we're living day by day, waiting and watching whether Hezbollah gets further involved in the conflict, dragging all of Lebanon into yet another life-draining crisis. The fates of all our peoples are in the hands of violent men who have lost any understanding of the value of human life. So what does presence mean in this particular moment? The following reflections are by no means comprehensive. There are merely a few ideas that come to mind as I write this piece. Political presence. I probably angered all sides with the words used in the preceding paragraph. Some heard it as judgment over Israel's claimed right to defend itself. Others as a failure to recognize the magnitude of the genocide currently being perpetrated against Palestinians. I also referred to Hamas's assault against Israeli civilians as an unprecedented attack, no doubt also angering those who would want me to condemn Hamas as a terrorist organization on one side, and those who would want me to affirm the Palestinian right to self-defense and resistance after 75 years of brutal occupation on the other. First, therefore, I would affirm that Christ-like presence is one that distinguishes between partisan politics and political engagement. Jesus' politics are driven by a stance on the side of the suffering. I weep for the families of the victims and hostages of Hamas on October 7, and I weep for the orphaned children and bereft parents of the victims of the Israeli government since October 7. The world is at the mercy of violent men and women caught up in an atrocious cycle of violence. Once more, the tears of Jesus as he looked upon Jerusalem and wept over it flow to us as we hear his words, "If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes." Luke 19:41-42. Economic presence. Second, at this moment, the church's presence requires acting according to economics of abundance rather than scarcity. In such terrible times as these, the church needs to stand in solidarity with the displaced and destitute on all sides. There are thousands of Israelis and Palestinians who have been made refugees right now. By the time this piece is published, there may also be thousands of Lebanese who are displaced due to the expansion of the conflict into Lebanon. So, as we look at our resources, will we observe, like Philip, that it would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have a bite? Or as we look at our 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish, will we exclaim like Andrew, "But how far will they go among so many?" Or will we hear Jesus' words of faith, "Have the people sit down and give thanks and distribute to all those in need." John 6:7-11. The church, once again, will need to abandon partisan politics in order to practice its presence through a mentality of abundance, possibly at great cost to itself everywhere. Will we rise up to this immense challenge? Religious presence. In times of great conflict, the human tendency is to take refuge in self-protectionism through sectarian politics and religious exclusivism. But the Gospel of Jesus precisely calls us to rise above those divisive walls. The third dimension of the church's presence, then, begins by hearing what we do not wish to hear, that religion that divides and builds walls is no religion at all, that we must break away from religions that are merely the ideologies of godless people. The church practices its presence in the world as we give heed again to the words of God through his prophet Hosea, "For I desire mercy, not sacrifice, an acknowledgement of God rather than burnt offerings." Hosea 6:6. Jesus heard those words and made them his own in Matthew 9:13 and 12:7. Social presence. In times of conflict, our instinct is to protect our own and safeguard the cohesion of our social networks and communities. But here again, the church's presence bears a radical social dimension as we hear Jesus' definition of "who is my neighbor," and we practice his teaching in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Fourth, therefore, the church practices its presence by reaching across conventional social boundaries as we refuse to look the other way. As we look with compassion at all those who have been beaten and stripped and left half dead, we are called to take pity on them, bandage their wounds, pouring oil and wine. Luke 10:25-37. Personal presence. Finally, times of great upheaval inflict on millions of people a sense of personal hopelessness and despair. As so many face the loss of loved ones, they are driven to anger and a desire for revenge. Brutal ideologies, clothed in religious language, will seek to cultivate and harvest recruits for the next cycle of violence and terror. Political and militant language will construct narratives of indignation, whether in the high courts of international forums or in the dark underworld networks of subversive groups. The fifth dimension of the church's presence, then, is to reach out to those who have been broken by loss. The church is possessed with the power of the Holy Spirit, the comforter in the midst of hopelessness, the advocate of the dispossessed. As the church itself is dealing with loss and grief, can it hear the soft whisper of God's Spirit who gives peace that surpasses understanding? Can its wounds become a source of healing from which Christ's suffering and sense of abandonment restores hope in a God who comes through with victory over death? Will we channel through our presence the very presence of Christ, God with us, through the valley of death? This moment in history is a great test of the church. Will we act in the confidence of Christ's comprehensive redemption of the world?